You're very welcome back. Jeff Mitchell works with me and is part of the Horizons production team. He lives in Aunascall. So he chatted to Robert and Sandra Hoffman, farmers and regular blood donors.
Robert and Sandra, welcome and thanks for joining us on Horizons. Can I start by asking you, what made you want to donate?
It was something I hadn't thought about really until my father got sick. He was in hospital for a while and he hemorrhaged inwardly and he had to get a lot of blood. I think it was 1978, and I suppose after that really I just made up my mind, you know, that it was a great thing that somebody gave blood that he got, you know, and I said, why the hell can't I give blood to somebody if they need it, you know? And it started there really.
And you've been regular blood donors since then?
Regularly donating since 50 years, I suppose, really, you know, regularly, yeah.
So how much blood do you think you've donated over the years?
I've donated 115 pints over the years, you know, which is a lot of blood.
So you're probably what we'd call a super donor.
I'm a donor anyway, I don't know about super.
And Sandra, you've also been a regular donor.
I know I started the same time as Robert did, but seeing as I had to have babies and things. So I have 82 donations given. But it's easier, I think, for a man to donate rather than a woman because, as I say, the man doesn't have the babies and things. So
a woman can't donate if she's pregnant?
No, or for so long afterwards. I think about a year afterwards or something like that, yeah. Just because he started, I decided to start with him and we both go together now, so we do. But this year I have reached the age of 70, so I can continue to donate, but I have to go to my doctor yearly now to get a certificate of health so that I can continue to donate.
What's the procedure of donating blood and how long does it take?
Well, it has speeded up a lot since the COVID came in, actually, because you have to book in now. You know, and as soon as you arrive, you get a questionnaire to fill out, and then they take a sample from your finger to know is your blood count okay, that you're not anemic, right? You know, that it's safe to give blood. And I suppose it'd be over in half an hour, 3/4 of an hour at the most, really. So it isn't that long, really.
After donating blood, how long does it take the body to replenish the blood that you've had taken?
Very shortly, I think maybe 3 or 4 days, I think, really. It doesn't take long to build it up, really.
And just after giving your donation, you always get a tea, coffee, orange, Coke and chocolate and potatoes. And that's the best part of it.
So it's worth doing to have a cup of coffee and some chocolate afterwards.
I'm going for the coffee and the biscuits, yes.
How often or how regular can you donate blood?
Every 3 months you can give blood, you know. It builds up sufficiently, I suppose, that you can give it again. It's safe to give it after 3 months. But they come to Tralee, we usually give it, I think, about maybe 3 times a year. But in other countries, they have to. In America, I think you get paid to give blood. You can sell your blood. I think it's a great thing in Ireland that people give it voluntary, which is a great generosity, I suppose, of the Irish, you know, that they give blood freely, you know, and there's no payment for it or whatever. It's just from the heart.
And do you think here in Ireland we need more blood donors?
Oh, definitely. I mean, there are some days you would hear maybe on the radio that there's only about 4 or 5 days' blood in storage, you know, and they're constantly looking for new donors.
So if somebody wants to donate blood, where can they find out more details about the process?
It's usually advertised in radio. You know that the Blood Transfusion Services are in Tralee. It's usually in the Brandon Hotel in Tralee, or Killarney, or Castle Island, I think they come to as well, you know. And you just go along, and you probably have an extra form to fill out if it's your first donation. Like that, they take a blood sample from your finger. Sometimes you'd see people going for the first time, and you'd notice their first time because they have a different... They have, I think it's the pink form they have as opposed to a blue form if you've given before. And you'd say, that person, that was their first time, you know. And they'd be a bit nervous, of course, you know. And some of them you'd see going away because their blood count wouldn't be right. You know, they obviously hadn't been tested before to know was their blood count okay to give blood.
So not everyone can donate blood.
No, you'd see the any time I'd be there now, you'd see a few people going away that they wouldn't be suitable to give the blood, you know. And they generally refer those back to their GP, you know, to get it checked out or whatever, like, you know.
Have either of you been rejected?
Well, there's a couple of times I've been rejected because my blood count has been low. But the next time then it would always have built up again and I'll be able to give it the next time, yeah. So just because you're rejected once doesn't mean that you're rejected for life, for you life, know. Yeah. You usually grant again the next time that they'll come around.
Yeah, there was, I suppose it was 5 years ago now, I suppose in 2018, I went to Kenya for voluntary work in Kenya for 3 weeks. And for a period after coming back, I wasn't able to give blood. I forget what the length of time was now, but as soon as the time was up and the blood transfusion crowd came, I went straight away again and started giving blood, you know.
What voluntary work were you doing in Kenya, Robert?
I was mostly with farmers, really. It was water. The biggest problem there is water, really, scarcity of water. Where the particular place we were in, Otasika was the name of the place, and the water was the biggest problem. They had tanks there that were there for years, and they were wired in, and there was no roof on them. And you'd see the ladies coming for the water on Wednesdays and Fridays or something, and they'd put in the drum into the well, into the tank to get the water out. And the water was actually green. And the biggest problem there, we were told, were the monkeys. Do you know, the monkeys get thirsty as well, obviously. They climb over the wire to get the water. If the tank has gone down, they reach down for the water and they fall into the tank and they get drowned inside the tank. And they just fish the monkeys out and away with the water again. Like. But I was given a lot of donations at the time I was going out when people heard I was going out. And that money went to cover a tank. There was three tanks. There was one tank covered already and the water inside and that was clear. And the other two tanks were actually green. But the money that there was, I was given by people that went to cover one tank. But the three tanks in that particular place are covered now. I've seen photos of them there. The three tanks are covered.
That's great work. And when you got back, you continue to give blood.
Oh, I'll continue. While I have blood, I'll share it around.
People can be a bit squeamish when it comes to needles. Does it hurt much when you donate blood?
No, it never bothered me, really. I mean, when the nurse is putting in the needle into your vein, she always says, turn away. And I said, yeah, not at all. I just watch her putting it in, you know. But some people are squeamish. They don't like needles. They don't like blood. They don't like the thought of giving blood. But still, if they needed blood, I'm sure they'd accept it if they were in the position that they needed it, you know.
And how do you feel after donating blood? How does it make you feel?
I suppose you're given something that will be of benefit to somebody else. And I mean, it doesn't cost anything, not that cost wouldn't matter. To help somebody, you'd give them money as well, but you're giving your blood, which you have any, you have plenty of it. So why not spread it around?
And I believe it's not just you two, but your sons, Giles and Ivan, are also regular blood donors.
Giles has over 50, I think, given now. And yeah, 50 pints. And Ivan as well gives. I suppose we have 300 pints given between all of us, really, like, you know, a lot of blood.
That's fantastic, because it's given something back.
Well, it is. I mean, it costs you nothing. There's a song, I don't know if you ever hear it with Jeff. If I can help somebody as I go along, my living will not be in vain.
That's lovely.
That's the bottom line, surely, isn't it?
Robert and Sandra, thank you very much for talking to us today. And well done on such an amazing achievement in being such regular blood donors. Thank you.
More than welcome, Jeff.
Yeah,
thank you too.
Very much, Jeff.
If I can help somebody as I pass along, if I can cheer somebody with a word or a song, if I can show somebody he is traveling wrong, then my living shall not be in vain. Then my living shall not be in vain. Then my living shall not be in vain. If I can help somebody as I pass along, then my living shall not be in vain. If I can do my duty as a Christian ought, if I can bring back beauty to a world abroad, if I can spread love's message like the Master taught, then my living will not be in vain. Then
The Irish Tenors with If I Could Help Somebody. Gabriel Tomás, thank you very much for joining me this morning on Horizons. Gabriel, we chatted before and I thought that you had retired from poetry with your A Farewell to Poetry, but you've written lots since.
Not a lot. I published A Farewell to Poetry, I think, in 2019. And I had an experience in Craig Cave with my wife and at the time two grandchildren, Katie and Paddy. We were over in the Craig Cave in Castle Island, in the play area there, and suddenly a line of a poem came to me, and I knew this was going to be the last line. Normally it's the first line of a poem that comes to me, but the last line was, "When I learned to trust myself, I trusted you," and I was talking to God. I suppose I didn't trust myself and I didn't trust God for years. You know, I went to Mass and I went to confession and received communion, but I couldn't forgive myself. You know, go to confession and say to the priest, like, you know, what I'm going to say to you now, I'm going to be saying to you in 6 months' time again. Where's my purpose of amendment or the rest of it? I didn't trust myself. And when I learned to trust myself, of course I could trust God and also trust life. And that was a poem that I wrote in July 2016. And I didn't write another poem until I wrote a poem for our 40th wedding anniversary 2 years ago. And since then, I've written about 10 poems. They're not coming as quickly to me. The inspiration comes every bit as quickly to me. But you instinctively know if it is worth pursuing. You know, kind of you say, damn it, I've said that before. There's no point in going down that road. No point in killing myself for days and days and days writing a poem only for it to wind up in the waste paper basket. So if I get an idea or a poem or an inspiration, for want of a better word, I will kind of instinctively know if it is worth pursuing. And as I said, this still comes to me, but I've only chased it about 10 times in the last few years. And the poems are good. They're different. Like, I'm over 70 now, and it's about time that I got a bit of wisdom in my life. What is it? Your old men shall see visions and your youth will dream dreams. Isn't that from the Bible, is it? But yeah, I'm seeing visions, and the poems are better. They're wiser. They're from an older point of view. They're commemorating people who've died, people that have gone before me. Love, Christmas. I usually write a poem at Christmas. I don't know why, but it might be the same old stuff. I have a damn good Christmas poem now, which is being published in the great Australian magazine Quadrant for next Christmas. Yeah, I do still write poems, even though that I did write A Farewell to Poetry. But Michael Hartnett wrote A Farewell to English in 1975, the great poet, when he turned to Irish, and then he went back to English again after about 10 years.
And all
so you never say never.
Never say never. All the musicians, everybody does it. They retire a million times and they come back even stronger. So
yeah,
it's great that you're still writing. And church is still very important to you, Gabriel.
Church is more important now than ever. We took a body blow at COVID, because the churches were closed, the lockdown. We were lucky in my van insofar as we had Father Kevin McNamara, who said Mass at what he called the Door of Hope on the side of the church facing the car park, where people turned up in their cars, parked in the car park. There was a loudspeaker speaking the Mass, or broadcasting the Mass out to the people in the car park, and people got Mass. That was tremendous. There has been a fall off in attendance at Mass, I think, since COVID. People got into the habit of listening to Mass on the radio or television. During COVID, we listened to that wonderful Mass from Ballyvourna, from Cúlé, with the Cúlé Oscailge and the singing. And it was beautiful.
Lovely.
And I think people got into the habit of that. I think there's less people going to Mass now.
They're coming back a bit.
They might be.
You see,
be.
It's a community thing as well,
it
would
is.
You say?
It is, definitely. And we have a new priest now in my van. I think he's wonderful, Father Brendan Carmody. He's a retired Jesuit, and he gives great sermons, very thought-provoking sermons in a very concise way. But this is serious stuff. Yeah, I enjoy going to Mass. It's part of what I am. It's part of my culture. It's part of my identity.
How do you feel when you see the age profile of the priests? You know, they're getting older, there are less of them. Do you feel a sadness, or how do you feel around all of that?
I feel a sadness, I'll be honest with you. Well, first of all, what they're saying is, you know, that the laity can involve themselves an awful lot more in sacramentals and stuff like that. But, you know, still the consecration and the Mass, the Eucharist, the consecration, that has to be done by a priest. But if I can say this on radio, Kerry, if you don't cut me off, I don't see why they don't ordain married men, why they don't ordain women. I see no theological reason except a cultural reason and a traditional reason. After all, who were the first people at the tomb on Easter Sunday? They were the women. Who were the people who supported Christ all around the place? Mary Magdalene and many others. I think there is a place right at the centre of the church for women, and the sooner the better.
We're all waiting for that, Gabriel. We really are, you know. So we'll keep saying it. The synodality going on now, and they're listening. And let's see what happens. Let's watch this space.
Watch this space.
Gabriel Fitzmaurice, thank you very much for chatting to me this morning.
You're very welcome.
After the break, Father Seamus O'Connell brings us an expert on the book of Isaiah.